This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Rock and Roll Denim, Bill Fick Ford, the WCRA, and Resistol.
Attention all rodeo athletes. Join us for the Cowtown Christmas Championship Rodeo in December. Over $360,000 in prize money in the historic Cowtown Coliseum. In Fort Worth, December 14th through 17th. And no entry fees. Qualify using the VRQ for the Triple Crown of Rodeo $1 million cash bonus. Featured on a CBS network broadcast. To get started, go to the App Store, download the WCRA Rodeo app, and hit nominate. This is your chance to rodeo in December. Nominate today or visit us at WCRARodeo.com.
Guys, another year has ticked by. Challenging year, but there was somebody you could rely on if you needed a new Super Duty pickup, and that was Bill Fick Ford. Once again, the number one Super Duty dealer in the entire country. You guys have seen what's going on in the car business, in the truck business. You're seeing trucks being sold for thousands above MSRP. Well, if you go to Bill Fick Ford, it doesn't matter where you are at in the continental U.S., he will take care of you. He will stand by the product, and he will not take advantage of you. Guys, Bill Fick Ford is the only place you can go in 2022 for a no bull discount. Bill Fick Ford.
What sets Resistol apart is the legacy of the cowboys who wear the brand. These traditions are passed down from fathers to sons, from heroes to future champions. Since 1927, Resistol has been handcrafting the finest American-made cowboy hats. Generation after generation, we live it every day.
This is The Gauge with host Chance Conradu.
Are you freaking serious? It's Conrado. This is The Gauge, and I am Chance Conrado. On this episode of the podcast, we have got Ken Bray of Equibrand. This is a pretty analytical podcast, and we talk about business and you know, things like business, and it's a really great podcast. Check it out. I thought it would be, it's funny you had mentioned Clinton when you came in here, and he was the guy who originally told me, hey, you need to get Ken on here because he's full of wisdom. That's what he said. He said you were full of wisdom and that you would have all kinds of knowledge and information to share with you know, the audience.
Well, he's pretty easy to please then, isn't he?
Well, I don't think we should talk about that on this podcast. But yes, he is. But I highly doubt that because he doesn't really give people compliments very often. So, yeah, I think you have an interesting probably perspective on a lot of things, I would guess, just based because you're really tied into really one of the largest businesses that actually is in this part of the Western world. And it's hard to do to carve out a large business in the Western industry. We figured that out ourselves. But how long have you been doing? How long has Equibrand been a brand?
Equibrand has been a brand since 95. Actually started in business in 1987. So that dates me a little bit. But whenever we started Classic Equine, then it no longer made sense to answer the phone Classic Rope. And so we started Equibrand. And that was kind of our vision to branch out with other products and brands and serve a greater equine community outside the ropers.
Yeah. Yeah. No. And that makes a lot of sense. And you guys have, you've really diversified, which I think, like, if you're thinking about business in a subculture, which obviously you've had to do because that is your whole business, I guess you have to figure out how you can reach as many of those people and be diverse as possible so you don't get stagnant. I'm assuming that was the idea behind all that.
Yeah, it was just an opportunity to grow. We really had some early success, hard-earned, hard-fought, but with the rope division side of it, and we're servicing a consumer that, you know, used other products. We just saw an opportunity in the market, and then also just really had an interest in reaching out to the greater equine community from the Western sports side of things.
Let's jump back a little bit and get a little bit of your personal backstory and kind of what led you to wanting to do this. And then I'm sure you've got a lot of really good information and maybe even advice to people on what path to take in the Western world if it's not pro rodeo. Because I think a lot of people, myself included, at some point you fall into what should I do, like with my short time on this earth, if it's not going to be roping or barrel racing or whatever that is, because let's face it, that's a small group of people who can make that work for their entire life. And anyway, if you would, you know, get into some of your early history, if you want to call it that.
Just grew up in the Western industry, really. My dad was the son of a rancher. And so we grew up in the cattle business and the feedlot industry, and rodeo, horses, horse racing was a part of what we did. It was the culture we lived in, and we just didn't really know anything different. And followed that on, you know, into high school rodeo and college rodeo, and found myself in Stephenville, and, you know, graduated from school, you know, broke and no money and ready to start a career. I really couldn't afford to go rodeo, if I'm being really honest. I'm not sure that I either had the horses or the raw talent to make it very long. And so, because I was working my way through school and that, you know, just surviving was a priority. Not my roping was way on the back burner at that time. But I loved horses, always had a passion for horses. We always started and trained our own horses and worked for horse trainers while I was in school. Got to work for some, you know, really cool people like Joe Stiles at the King Ranch for a period of time and Bruce Reeves, who actually had Little Peppy up until a couple of months before the NCHA fraternity. And of course, Buster Welch went on and did amazing things with him. But so I was tied around some people that really knew how to make a great horse, knew a good horse, knew how to make a great horse. So I wanted to be a horse trainer. My parents pushed me towards, you know, a business route and didn't know what I was going to do. Took an aptitude test at the college, just confused as all get out, like a lot of kids are in school, getting out of school and not knowing what the industry held. It said that I had an acumen for finance and marketing, and had a buddy that roped at a really high level that also had a bank job. And I said, all right, well, I'm going to be like Gary Knox. I'm going to be a banker. And so I drew a circle around Stephenville, interviewed with banks, tried to get on as a banker. After I'd graduated from Tarleton State.
Was your degree in finance? Is that what you did? Or
And I had a minor in accounting, but I majored in marketing. Mm-hmm. So just because I wanted a more broad general business degree, really, sure. And marketing applies to it all. So that's why I went that route. But at the same time, I interviewed with some trainers that I respected that I wanted to, you know, go to work for as an apprentice. I had to get some income because I had nothing, and so it had to come with some compensation. I was hired by a trainer that I respected, and it was kind of a storybook thing. I, you know, lived in a small trailer house with a lot of other guys, and here was this opportunity. It was a new brick home and good training program, good breeding program, had the horses coming behind, and so this was kind of a storybook opportunity that didn't play out like so many things in the horse business does. That gentleman lost his job the day, you know, shortly after he hired me, and so I didn't hear from him for a while, and a buddy of mine, John Ness, is a horseshoer, and said, hey, whatever happened with this guy? And he said, well, the people that own the ranch decided that they wanted to exit the horse industry, and so he's looking for a job too, Ken. The next day, the bank called, so I became a banker. It was a great opportunity. I wouldn't trade for it at all. Learned a ton. Teamed up with some guys, or they brought me under their wing is more like it, and taught me all aspects of banking and spent a lot of time in all the different departments of the bank, learned it from the ground up, and in pretty short order became a loan officer with a decent portfolio. One of my customers at the bank was contracted to do a business plan and hire a business manager for a startup rope business. And he asked me if I would be interested in coming on board. And I couldn't wait to take off the tie and get back to something that felt more normal to me. And so I left the bank to join a startup rope company that was funded by a family business. And as so many things do, good people, but family businesses don't always last sometimes. And this one didn't. The family broke apart, the business was sold, to some new partners that brought me in later as a partner, and now, full circle. I'm still here, still with the business since 1987, and own the majority share of the business now with some other great people, some other partners in the business.
One of the reasons I really wanted to talk to you is because it's such a different perspective, right? We do a lot of these shows, and a lot of it is just you got to have grit, you got to win, you got to win, win, win. But a lot of times there's the majority, like the vast majority of the people get lost in that. Like they might be able to get something out of it from a motivational standpoint, which is a great thing. Or you know, if you look at really high performers, right, and you've been around them forever, especially in our industry, they're a specific type of person. You can get things from that, but there's another type of person who excels in the other things, people like you and actually myself, where you have to take a really hard look at yourself and look at, and it sounds like this is what you did, right? Did you have aspirations to pro rodeo, or did you recognize immediately that might bankrupt you, for lack of better terms?
Well, I always understood the financial aspect of it, but oh yeah, I had aspirations for it for sure.
Yeah.
So after I was working for a while and actually could afford jackpot entry fees and then started amateur rodeo and circuit rodeoing and the likes of that, but by that time the business was the main driver, and it's just funny how things turn out. I tell young people all the time, you know, quit worrying about it. You can't make a mistake. Just move forward.
Right.
You know, try hard, work hard, and doors are open, and just be ready to walk in.
Yeah. Yeah,
there won't be any funny doors open if you're sitting on your butt, but just get out there and get after it, and you don't know what you don't know.
Yeah, yeah, no, that's true. But when you were looking at, like, going to the bank, I'm sure there was a certain amount of fulfillment that was missed when you're doing something like that. Because did you completely shelf everything with horses and all that for that whole period of time when you were doing that, or?
I didn't shelf the horses. I actually, kept the horses that I had and was able, you know, had an income now. So I was actually able to go, you know, compete again.
Spend your weekends how you wanted to.
Right.
Yeah.
So I was a weekend warrior.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Some people hate that term.
Yeah. That was me.
Yeah. There's nothing wrong. I actually think it's a positive term. If you actually think about it, it's like, yeah, because you're being a really responsible person, which people don't like the idea of that. It's not super sexy to be a responsible person. But if you're going to work to fund your hobby and you're not losing your house and you're not having to max out credit cards to chase a dream, that's probably not going to work. And you're a responsible person. It's a good thing.
It's a hobby that's kind of like a second job that you're putting a lot of time and effort into.
You know what? Anything in the Western world is such a unique. Have you ever thought about how unique of a hobby it is? Because it's not just a hobby. It's your entire way of life. So if you look at barrel racing and team roping are two great examples, right? There's a jackpot team roping every night of the week in this area, no matter where you're at, if you're in this area. Same with the barrel race. There's huge ones. There's tons of opportunity to compete and do that. And most people, like, their whole life surrounds that hobby, if you want to call it that. I mean, everything goes into it for someone's entire life. It's kind of interesting. I don't know of any other hobbies, if you want to call them, that are like Western sports.
I agree. It's just the lifestyle and the passion of it all. So me and three other guys that actually worked at Classic at that time, we roped together and we rodeoed together. So we would leave on Wednesday night, Thursday night, in what's now the UPRA, it used to be TCRA and the CRA, CRRA, mm-hmm. those three associations that we rodeoed in. And amateur rodeo in Texas is nothing to sneeze at. So, it's all there. But we would leave, you know, at 5:30 in the afternoon and haul butt to whatever rodeo we're trying to get to, always get up in the slack if we could so that we could make it in time. And be there at those all-night slacks and then drive all night back to the office and get started again for the next day. And we would do that, you know, for the entire rodeo season.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really interesting. Some of the things I was wanting to ask you about is how someone, let's say that they're a little lost, right? Young person, they're in the Western industry. They know they're not going to be a professional. But, like, for example, you started – at a very nonlinear point, right? And you went through this whole thing. And I don't know how you got involved in the business, if it was a sweat equity type thing or how you did all that. But, you know, how does somebody go from the point of, I don't know what I want to do, I just want to be in the Western world, to being able to be a wildly successful person in the industry, not competing, obviously, but, you know, how would you, if someone came to you and asked you that, what kind of step-by-step guidance could you provide them?
Well, I think to do what we did, you know, right place, right time, taking advantage of an opportunity. So I think you always have to have your radar out for an opportunity. And, you know, I think that anything you set your mind to, you can accomplish at the same time. And don't be afraid to make mistakes and run into fences and get a bloody nose and learn from it, but always keep pushing forward. Because, you know, nothing's easy. There's no easy task. But to me, there's never been a greater opportunity for young people than there is today, because nobody wants to work. It's easy to be a standout. You don't have to try that hard to be extraordinary today. And I don't mean that with any disrespect. I'm telling it as the honest truth. So I see a great opportunity for that reason, the way that culture has developed to, and it's not just our industry, it's the world, isn't it?
Oh, it's just everything.
That they want things brought to them, but those that go out and get it, it's damn sure there to be gotten.
Isn't it so unique how this weird shift, I don't know if it's the last 10 years, but at least for myself and like the people in my age bracket, it is really unique to see what's happened to people's attention. We were actually just talking about that. It's almost like there's so many, it's different barriers, right? Like before all this crazy technological boom and all these advancements like phones and all the different things that, in fact, we were just talking about like how when you were a kid, right, you'd have your TV show that you wanted to watch, and you'd like wait that 1 week to watch it. I don't know what it would have been or if there was one, but like you had to be so patient for that. Now it's all at your fingertips and you can watch it anywhere. It's like you don't even, like, it's almost like peasantry if you have to watch TV somewhere and wait for something. And that's affected people's brains in a weird way.
It is. It's exactly that way. It's instant gratification. And it just doesn't happen like that if you're wanting to become, you know, the greatest athlete or a NFR competitor or world's greatest horseman or a business owner. It's a grind. You just got to be a fan of the process.
Yeah. Yeah. How have you, because one issue I've always had in my career, if you want to call it that, is struggling with destination happiness and not enjoying that process. Have you always been a process enjoyment guy, or did you have to figure out ways in yourself to cope with, you know, how slow sometimes things go?
I have, and I think really we have as a team, and it's not just me. I mean, we have an amazing team that is Equibrand, and we drive each other, and so it's not just me, but we're not very good at celebrating success. You know, we're quickly off to the next project, and oh yeah, we did get that done. That was good, wasn't it? Or, you know, as far as saving pictures or memorializing anything, we're not very good at it, but and I'm not for sure. We're just, you know, I like the drive part. I like the challenge part. I get bored easy.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I understand that. But you've been in the same business for so long. Do you think that's why there's been so many different divisions under the, you know, parent company, if you want to call it that, is because of that? Like who drives that, you, maybe the term would be innovation, but, you know, diversification maybe.
I think I would say that I was the driver of it, but, you know, it's, again, it's that the fulfillment of it is, you know, certainly a team effort. It's just seeing an opportunity in the marketplace. You know, the horse industry is an amazing industry, and it's way bigger than a lot of people think it is and way smaller than a lot of people think it is, but it's a great industry and it's a great market. And it's also very, very diversified. It's extremely fragmented, and so it's not easily tapped into because you can't fake horse, and you can't fake anything within the discipline. So multiple languages are spoken in the horse industry, and you have to be able to talk to a barrel racer the way that she understands how to be talking to her, or the way that she wants to be spoken to, which is different than how you'd speak to a reiner. It's just a different culture within the culture, so to speak.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good way to put it. Yeah, because there's so many different segments in it. And, yeah, I've never thought about culture inside of a culture, but, yeah, it is. I mean, it's all – and it's funny. If you were somebody on the outside of the Western world and you look at it, they're not going to know the difference. But it's like there's so many different eclectic groups inside of this that are at so many different levels of performance and what they do that, yeah, that is a code that is pretty miraculous to see you guys cracked.
Well, we did it with help and work. You have to take a sincere interest in the consumer, and you have to have a true respect and understanding of their sport. And, you know, what we try to do is be problem solvers. You know, train, compete, win is our slogan for Equibrand. And, you know, if you can help horses stay in the game better, help them be more protected, help that athlete, equine athlete, and horsemen and horsewomen do their job better, then you add value and you have credibility if you do that. But you can't fake it.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that really shines through, like, with businesses, because everything is a cloak and a mirror at this point, with 90% of people who are putting out products and, you know, wanting somebody to invest in that product. And there's just very little genuine, you know, there's not really much ethic, you know. There's not very many ethics in what people do anymore to make profit.
And it, you know, it's to be credible in the industry. I don't think that you can ever slow down. What you did yesterday doesn't matter. You have to continue to move forward. You can't, you know, just sit on one product and think that that's going to carry you through. So, product development is a big deal for us. 80 to 100 new products for the last I don't know how many years, and you know, continually tweaking even the flagship products that we have to make them better as we go. But you have to be out in the barn. You have to get your boots dirty, and not a lot of people want to do that either. So, you know, you have to be amongst the horsemen, and you have to listen to what they need. And our team is made up of people that are in the horse industry. So there's just something about a horse, and, you know, if that passion just pulls through and it makes you want to get up in the morning and do a good job and see what you can do different and better today.
Guys, Rock and Roll Denim has absolutely changed the game when it comes to the performance and style in Western jeans. Top competitors like Shad, Tim O'Connell, Shelly Morgan, you name it. Your boy right here, we're all wearing Rock and Roll Denim. Inside and outside of the arena, it gives you the flexibility you need to win, as well as looking absolutely great in your interviews, appearances, whatever it is you're doing. Even when you're just doing podcasts like me. I had a chance to go to Rock and Roll Denim's factory the other day and pick out all the pants I wanted. Here's the thing. I got to try on a bunch of their new jeans. I love the men's revolver jeans with the reflex stretch technology because they're comfy. They're not stiff like some of the other jeans. Go check them out at rockandrolldenim.com or follow Rock and Roll Denim on Facebook and Instagram for the newest trends in Western fashion. Rockandrolldenim.com.
Yeah, we've talked about it almost probably to people listening, like at nauseam, about the weird connection between humans and horses. But I mean, it's just centuries and centuries and centuries old. You know, I mean, it predates most anything that we see in this world.
Yeah, horses make people happy, and it's it's incredible to me, and I'm so proud of the industry. And it has a lot to do with I guess just the core and the grit of people that throw hay over the fence, and there's just something different about them. They're a little tougher, you know. They're definitely focused and they're driven on what they like to do. And there's people that are just every bit as passionate about trail riding as they are running down the fence at the Snaffle Bit Futurity. You know what I mean? So it's there's just a connection there, but that connection doesn't go away. It's there every day. It's morning and night, and you have to take care of it. And so even whenever we go through a cycle and, you know, economic cycle, the horse industry pushes through because it's what people do. It's just part of their life.
I talk to business people everywhere all the time outside of this just to try to gauge what's going on in the world. Because if you have a business, right now is not great. It's not a fun time to try to project what's going to happen. But there is a bit of recession-proof in what you guys do because, yeah, I mean, the people who have horses, I mean, they're going to go without before the horses do. And that adds some protection to businesses like yours, whereas, you know, maybe some other commodity businesses that have nothing to do with it, they're not protected. So that's really unique.
Yeah, it's unique, but it's also what people do. It's just that we happen to do it with a horse because whenever people, you know, through tough times, you usually try to do something that makes you feel better. And for us in this industry, the horse does that for us. It's our fix, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. Yeah, it is. I mean, there's a reason that they use them for therapies and all these different you know, these different things. It's, there's just something healing about it. And then there's a whole sense of pride that you can get. Like if you've got, there's a lot of kids who the only thing out there is like their parents' little dink ranch and the few horses out there. And like, you can put so much effort into caring for those horses and riding those horses that you get a sense of pride, that pride and a work ethic just from the fact that you were born on that ranch and had to take care of something or farm, that can really carry you far. And I'm sure you notice a trend with a lot of people like yourself and people who come from that background, is just the complete and total lack of fear for the hard work, because you've known it your whole life. It makes stuff in like the domestic world a little easier, don't you think?
Like I said, they're just tougher. There's just a little more grit and a little more try. And what was it Clinton said, that you don't drown in your own sweat?
Yeah.
So, you know, you've learned how to get up early and be responsible and take care of something. So that carries on through.
Yeah. Who's better at just those one-liners than him? He's just the best at random one-liners that really the only information you need. You know, you're not going to drown in your own sweat. It's like, a good point. You're probably not going to drown in your own sweat, but you know, everybody's afraid of it for some reason. Yeah. When you're looking at like the world and the way it is right now, how much of that do you take in? Like, are you spending a lot of time analyzing trends in the market and looking at what's going on geopolitically and all that stuff to try to plan your guys's continuation? Or, I mean, what do you observe as a, you know, the CEO of your company?
Participation. So that's the real driver. So just like anybody else, whenever things are going on in the world, you know, that seem unsettling, you have whatever news media that you gravitate to find out what's going on in the world and try to figure out why in the world that is going on in the world. But really the main thing that we look at is participation. And even through everything that's going on today, the horse industry is incredibly strong. At the high school level, at the junior high level, you know, barrel races, rodeos, ropings, jackpot team ropings, cow horse events, cutting events, it's super strong right now. So even though the world is pulling back some, and I get it, I understand it, you know, costs are higher, inflation is real, it has just not impacted yet at the participatory competitive level.
When you look at it, now we're getting into other topics, but why not have a little bit of a worldly conversation too? We've hit a lot on the Western stuff, but when you're looking at it, because everybody seems to have a different opinion, like you guys went through the whole 07, 08, 09 thing as a company because you've been around so long, and so you are familiar with this sort of thing as a business, surely. And when you look at it, what do you actually think is gonna happen? There's some people saying it's gonna be the worst financial crisis of all time. There's other people that are like, it's just gonna be a really soft, little subtle reset. You know, I would rather have that, obviously. I think we all would, but.
I wish I had the crystal ball. I'd be worth a lot more money if we had that, for sure.
Yeah, I was like, I would have dumped everything into Tesla and Apple, forget businesses.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I guess all I can really say is that you know, since 1987, we've been through a lot of different presidents, and we've been through a lot of different business cycles and economic cycles, and the industry has continued to evolve and grow. So I try not to get too caught up in it, because if you do, it just drives you absolutely crazy. But just from historical actuality and experiences, the industry moves on and it continues to do what it does. So, you know, horse prices are at a record high right now, and participation, breeding of horses is crazy. I've got a couple of mares we're trying to breed right now, and at Champion Embryo, Dr. Stanowski, I was talking to him, he has 900 resit mares, you know, 900 in one facility. It's nuts. But, you know, will it come back a little bit? It might, but will it go back down to where what the old norm was? I really don't believe it will.
Well, I don't think anything will. I don't think it ever has. Like, it's certainly not the cost of a performance horse and not the breeding of that performance horse. There's too many avenues for those horses to continue going up in value.
Well, in demand. You know, there's so many disciplines, like just within what we do. We deal with about 750 different endorsed riders across, 16, 18 disciplines of Western equine sports. So that includes cowboy mounted shooting all the way to, rain cowhorse riders and trainers, to WPRA barrel racers and futurity riders in Barrel World, goat tires, you name it. So if you look at the fragmentation of it, there is just so much out there, and it's growing within all of those sectors. In 07, 08, I'm very, very conservative politically, and so I thought the world might be coming to an end.
Yeah.
But, shockingly and surprisingly, our industry grew exponentially during that time because oil and horses go together. And I believe oil will rebound. That's going to come back around, and hopefully they'll get some pricing fixed into it. I'm going to believe in the midterms we're going to be able to get some of this nonsense shut down. I'm not in control of it. I'm not going to worry about it. I'm just going to continue to try to make great products and encourage competitors to get out there and do what they do.
Yeah. Yeah, there's an inherent nature of conservatism that just pairs with the Western world. But, yeah, I mean, the whole thing is just a really interesting. And actually, I don't know any business owners in any segment that don't have some type of conservative value. Like, they might be a little social liberal or whatever, but as far as, core values and when it comes to operating a business, I mean, you do have to be a conservative person to, fiscally operate them. But yeah, it is interesting. Are you seeing things that remind you of 07, 08 and that time period?
To be honest with you, what this period right here reminds me of more is the beginning of COVID.
Yeah.
That's what it feels like to me, because at the competitive level and what you see with people, the engagement that people have with their horses right now across all disciplines of equine is still at a high. But what you in the houses, or what you see with store owners or whatever, is just a little bit of a deep breath and a pause. And that it feels more like that to me than anything else.
Sure. That's an interesting perspective. I don't think I've heard anybody say it that way.
I was by Teske's last week. Mm-hmm. Went there on a Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
And just to see what was going on, just to get out, and showed up at 10 o'clock. There was two parking spots left in the entire parking lot.
Wow.
At 10 o'clock on a Wednesday.
Really?
So, we're in a bubble in our industry. There's no doubt about it. But our industry just typically is not affected like what you see mainstream America.
Yeah, I mean, it really is interesting.
And thank God for it.
Yeah, I mean, it's really unique that it is so well insulated.
Yeah, and I can say that with some confidence too, because we through our various brands, we sponsor a ton of events a year, well over 100, and we do that most of the time with boots on the ground at the event. So mm-hmm. we're out there,
right?
And our team is out there, and we see what's going on, at the junior high level, at the national junior high finals rodeo that just wrapped up. National high school finals is fixing to start. We just finished the Texas high school rodeo finals, and all these other horse events. Had Jay Johnson just got back from Sherry Servey's youth barrel race in mm-hmm. California. We're all over the place, and we're just not seeing any back off right now amongst the competitors.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's super encouraging to hear that, especially with someone who has so many people boots on the ground, as you said. But what is kind of a day in the life of a Ken Bray look like as an operator of a company like this? I mean, how do you set things up? I mean, I've gotten to talk to CEOs of some pretty big companies at times, and everybody has a different approach. Some of them are pretty strict. Some of them are more idea guys. Like, what is your day in the life of look like?
I'm in the office at least 4 days a week. And then, every day, I ride every day. I like the young horse deal. And so I have one or two horses of my own that I'm training or trying to bring along. That's kind of I'm not old enough to play golf yet. So that's what I do. I still like the horse part of it. And I rope, but business wise, as I mentioned to you earlier, been in this since 1987. We've got a pretty remarkable team. And so we have you know, good people that are taking care of the various departments. We manufacture, we have 5 manufacturing divisions. We have 3 different locations. And we do a ton of outsourcing because we don't make anything in the United States anymore. Right. So we have to bring in most of the raw materials from out of the country. So I'm heavily involved in just checking to see where we're at with regards to production, monitor sales every day. I get a number of desktop reports emailed to me every morning so I can see, you know, what's going on in the business, every aspect of it, and keep my pulse on it that way and meet with the people that I need to meet with throughout the day or the week and you know, do my horse thing.
I mean, it sounds like a pretty good life for a cowboy.
Yeah, I've got the best of both worlds. I mean, to be able to make a living in the horse industry is the greatest blessing. So I feel pretty fortunate. And it's fun to be able to share that with other people too, because again, it's a team deal. We have 250 people that work for us, and a big chunk of them throw hay over the fence.
Yeah. I mean, and you guys have clearly created a culture to where people feel like they're a part of something, and then people stay when they feel like they're a part of something.
Yeah, it's fun to be to have an engagement actually at the event level, and to be able to help producers and associations put on better events, and help them create events that drive people to want to load up and go compete. I see a huge opportunity in the industry for that. It's a passion and a focus of mine. Still a part of Texas High School Rodeo Association. I'm president of that association. And so we put on a big event there with the Texas High School Finals, and had a stint in the team roping industry. We owned USTRC for 20 years. And, production quality is essential. And customer service at events is essential. The number one horse consumer is a woman. And, thank God for women, and thank God for women in the family, because if the mother is a part of it and likes the horse deal, the kids stay in the horse deal. So we just have to, I think there's an opportunity across the board, and I'm not bashing any association or any event producer or anything else. Sure. I'm just saying that, and you've had some other guests, I think Del Brisby even, talked about the responsibility that everyone does in this industry to promote our sports, promote our Western sports, whatever it is, whatever your passion
is. You really do. And I think people are finally grasping that, like on the competitor level, because for a long time, and there's still outliers, but you just couldn't get people to promote the industry outside of, their direct line. And, yeah, I mean, we're seeing a lot of echoes of it, though. Like, you're seeing mainstream celebrities sitting in a Western saddle on mainstream magazines, and that's just not something we've ever seen before, and it's really unique. And, yeah, when you talk about kind of the power that women or the mothers in these families have in the Western industry, I mean, it is incredible, And we've seen great strides as far as women's sports go, and we have the breakaway now, and more opportunity than ever for women to compete. So that's pretty cool.
As an industry, we've never had this kind of an opportunity.
Yeah.
But there's more participation. There's more people owning horses. There are more people engaged in riding horses, competing on horses. It's more opportunity for trainers. It's more opportunity for breeders. And, I really give a ton of credit to Taylor Sheridan and the whole 1883 and Yellowstone effect, and what that's done to the industry.
The Yellowstone effect is exactly what it is. Who would think that a ranchy show now, I mean, there's some over dramatizations of that show, but you have to do that for production value and to keep people hooked. But I mean, it's unbelievable. Everybody knows what it is. Everybody watches it. Like, I don't think I've ever met a person who hasn't.
Yeah. I mean, he's an amazing writer. Obviously the scripts are, if you don't have to ride a horse or have a horse to enjoy the drama of the program, but there is something about a horse, and people are drawn to that Western lifestyle, and they're drawn to the cowboy way and the horse. And I'm grateful for the way that he's engaged our industry in it with their cutters and our reiners, and and you know, making things better beyond Yellowstone with events, Teton Ridge, what they're doing, and getting involved in horse sports and helping, you know, our equine athletes and competitors and growing it. And then, you know, thank goodness for Jeff Metters and Patrick Gotch and what they've got going on with the Cowboy Channel. So, you know, the world can see what we do and they like it. And the growth and viewership of the Cowboy Channel is phenomenal.
It is.
And we all benefit from that as an industry. So I see it as a rising tide. And just because it's a rising tide, that doesn't mean that each and every one of us, if you've loved this industry, if you've loved the horse, if you've loved participating in Western sports, then get off your butt and invite somebody to come and play or help somebody get involved in what we do, because it takes us all.
It does, yeah. And you can really have a big effect on the world and the industry without a gold buckle. Like, we were learning that. And it's just as, you know, vital. You can't put it all on you know, a select group of people's shoulders. I mean, when you're in an industry like this that is so big, I mean, we're talking billions of dollars. I don't think people would realize how big the Western industry is. And it's all grassroots, though.
Yeah.
Individuals can make a huge difference. I mean, just look at, you know, look what you've done and what certain people have done. And even like a show like this, the amount of people that it reaches, it makes a huge difference.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're another example of that with what you do and the people that you bring on this show. I'm not sure, you know, I live up to that group of celebrities that you've had here, but, you know, keeping people engaged and learning more about horse sports, learning more about our industry is, it's an awesome thing. I appreciate what you're doing.
I appreciate that, and likewise, and the valuable insight, and just the time. I know you guys are busy, so to take the time and come here and sit down with us for a little bit is super valuable. And thank you. And yeah, you guys have a great company, and all industries need them. So thank you for that too.
Thank you.
This has been The Gauge, hosted by me, Chance Conrado, produced and edited by our guy, Ty Yeager. Shout out to the executive producers, Dustin Pointer and Cody Denton. Marketing and content produced by Riley Chone. Make sure to rate and review this podcast, as well as follow The Gauge on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. And make sure to subscribe to The Gauge wherever you get your podcasts. We'll see you guys next time.